Now we're holding on Ayin Gimel Amud Aleph at the top by the Mishnah. Now that we talked about yesterday about the case of Roidif, where a person is chasing somebody else with intent to kill, and we talked about that, Nitan Lahatsula Ganafsha, you can save the victim even if it involves killing the Roidif, and we talked about some details of that, how it applies to Baba Machteres, and how it applies more generally, and the exceptions to it. So now the Mishnah continues, the following are the cases where you can save a person with their own life. Now, on the face of it, what we mean is to save the victim at the cost of the Roidif's, at the cost of the Roidif's life. However, Tosfos points out that at least one of the examples that the Mishnah is going to bring doesn't really involve saving. The Mishnah is going to talk about, for example, a person who's chasing after an animal to commit bestiality with it. You can't really, we say that you don't. You don't kill the person to prevent him from doing that, but you can't really call that it would have been to save the animal. So therefore, Tosfos learns that Maksilonos in Menashe means that we kill the person who's about to do the Avera in order to save them from doing the Avera. So now the Mishnah is going to tell us, in other words, there are cases where we do that, and there are cases where we don't. It's not for every Avera. As we're going to work out the rule over here, it has to be that there's Arayas involved, and that there's Koloin and Pgam. There's humiliation and then causing a defect and causing a blemish in the victim. Those are the rules when you're able to kill the person. Even then, as we learned earlier in the Masechta, you also have to try to wound them first. You can't go and outright kill them. You have to try to wound them, try to cut off their arm or leg or whatever, shoot them in the arm or leg or whatever in order to make them stop. And if you can't, if that's not doing the job, then you can kill them. So the first one is Haroidif Acha Haver Lahogo. Somebody is chasing after somebody else with intent to kill them, as we learned about in the previous Mishnah and the Gemara about it. Then you have also the Echad HaZohar, or where he's running after a Zohar with intent to commit Mishkav Zohar with him, the Acha Naira Marosa, or after a Naira Marosa to rape her. So those are the cases where you can kill him if necessary to prevent it. Avala Roidif Acha Behema. So it's not only Naira Marosa necessarily. There may be other cases of Arias as well, but the point is that it is basically it's limited to those kinds of things. But if he's chasing after an animal to commit bestiality with it, now there is Arias over there because the animal is included in the category of Arias, but nevertheless, it's at least listed in the parasha of Arias. But there's no pgam because the animal doesn't really get blemished by that. We'll learn in Masechta Avodah Zarah later this year that it may cause the animal to be infertile doing those kinds of things with it, but that kind of thing is not considered a pgam. It's not considered a severe defect to the animal such that you should save the person at the cost of his life. Or he's running to break Shabbos or worship Avodah Zarah, where you would have thought that, now those are not Arayas at all, of course, but the fact is that you would think to learn them with a Kavah Chomer, as we're going to learn later on in the Gemara, or even Shabbos with a Gzeder Shavah, and more generally, I mean, those are fundamental things of Yiddishkeit, so you would think that maybe it would apply there. No, ein maksilonos in menafshon. We don't save them at the cost of their own lives. Instead, if they do it, they do it, and then we have Adim and we bring them to Beis Din and we take it from there. So the Gemara says, "Tanan Rabbanan, minayim leroidif acha chaver lahorgoi shenitza matzila benafshay." How do we know about this case where somebody is chasing after somebody else with intent to kill that you could save him at the cost of his own life? Therefore, the pasuk says, "Don't stand by your brother's blood." Meaning, don't stand, don't hold yourself back when your brother's blood is at stake, and go and save him. In fact, Tosfos points out that actually before we had before we learned from the case of the Baba Machteris, that would tell us you're allowed to. This pasuk is telling us that you're not just allowed to, you're required to, because otherwise you're being over on Lo Samer Al Dam Reyecha. So the Gemara asks, "V'hola hachi hu da'asa?" So you're telling me that we're learning that pasuk lo samar al damar echa for that purpose? V'hai mi bodle l'chidatanya? Don't we need instead that pasuk to teach us the following din? Minayin l'royas chaver shul chaver benahar. How do we know that if he sees somebody else drowning in a river, or wild animals dragging him away and is going to kill him, or listin boyin olav, or robbers are about to come to attack him, shul chayev lahatziloi, that he's chayev to save him, tamad loymaloi samad adam reecha. So therefore, so in other words, so we see from that pasuk that when it involves saving him, it doesn't involve necessarily killing anybody else. In all these cases that we're talking about, you're saving him in some other way. You're helping him hide. You're helping him get away from there or whatever. So we're using it for that. How do we also use that pasuk to teach us that you can kill the roid if when necessary? So the Gemara says, fine, Enochinami, that's true. You can't really learn from Lo Samar Al Dam Reecha. The Elam Nitin Latzila B'Nafshim Menalon. So where do we learn that you save him even at the cost of his own life? So the answer is Asya b'kavachoymer minayra amayrosa. Instead, we're going to learn it by a kavachoymer from the case of a nayra amayrosa. Ma nayra amayrosa shalei ba elal poigma. Consider the case of a nayra amayrosa. He's not actually coming to kill her. All he's coming to do is to be poigim her. He's going to remove her basulim. So Rashi uses the expression the poigim means the vaisha or the zalzala. He'll be shaming her and he'll be embarrassing her that now she's not a basula anymore. But her life will still be intact. Nevertheless, Omra Torah Nitin Latzila B'Nafshei. Nevertheless, the Torah says, as we're going to explain, as we're going to quote the pasuk soon, that it is permissible and even like Tosfos says, an obligation to save her, even at the cost of his life. Here, by the way, now, unlike we said before, that Tosfos has said, Latziloi B'Nafshei can mean to save the person himself from doing the Avera at the cost of his life, but here it's Latzilo B'Nafshei, so here we're talking about to save her. In any case, the point is that, the pasuk is going to tell us that you save her even if at the cost of his life, as we're going to learn the pasuk soon. So how much more so where he's coming to kill somebody else, where for sure that's going to be the person's life is at stake. Tosfos points out, in other words, that now, of course, it's true, the Naira Marotha does get a more severe punishment. There's skila involved, whereas hereg would involve only hereg, but fine, we're not talking about over here about the degree of Isser, we're talking about the degree of Pagima. So therefore we can truly make this kavachomer that you're going to have this you're going to have the greater pagima involved, obviously, when the person is killed, which can never be undone, versus with a naira marasa. Okay, but you can't punish a person based on a kavachomer, as we're going to talk about at the beginning of the next parak. In order to punish somebody, you need an actual limud from a pasuk. A kavachomer is not good enough. The note of Yehuda actually points out, we were learning yesterday about that it might be considered an oinish. We said we were discussing the case of a child, Roidif, where Rav Huna says that you can kill him, and Rav Chista had said that Rav Chista had brought brises to the effect that it seems to be a punishment. So the question is, there is the idea of saving the other person, but the fact is that there's also a degree of oinish in it, and the question is, ein oinish min adin, that you can't punish a person based on a kavachomer. So the Gemara says, fine. Dvei Rebbe Tana, we learned in a Braisa from the Yeshiva of Rebbe, Hekeshahu. The answer is that we can learn it by a Hekesh. And a Hekesh, first of all, a Hekesh, you can't just make up your own, but more to the point, also because you can't make up your own, therefore you can't slug it up so easily either. Even if you find that there is, even if you find there's reason to slug it up, nevertheless, the fact that the Torah puts two things, one next to the other, still means that we can learn one from the other, and we can't slug it up. So it's like this. The pasuk says, the pasuk describes the case like this. You have the Naira Marasa. First it describes what happens if it's consensual. What happens if she agreed to it, so it's not rape, but rather something else. So then the pasuk says both of them are executed. Then the pasuk goes on to say that if the man found her, he found her basade, he found her in the field, and we can assume that she screamed out and nobody came to save her, then we say that the pasuk says she's not punishable because she didn't do anything wrong. And the pasuk says, "Ki kasha yokum isha re'ehu etzochay nefesh," the same way as when a person stands up against somebody else and kills him. So it is with this thing as well. Now the question is, what exactly do we need to learn from the Ritzeach? We already know from the Psukim that the Naira Marasa is Potter when it was against her will. So what are we adding by bringing in this point about the Ritzeach? So this is one of those things where the Torah is coming seemingly to teach us something, but we end up actually learning from it. Meaning, in other words, like this, we would have, so it sounds like the Torah is saying you want to understand why it is that Naira Marasa is Potter, is because it's comparable to the case where a person was killed by somebody else. But instead, we're actually doing it the other way around. We're saying now, based on this comparison in the pasuk, we can learn that there is a similarity between a Naira Marasa and a Ritzeach, between a Ritzeach, we can learn from the Naira Marasa to the Ritzeach. Makas Ritzeach and Naira Marasa. Meaning that the Torah therefore is comparing the case of a Ritzeach to the case of Naira Marasa. Ma Naira Marasa nitin latzila b'nafshei. So just like a Naira Marasa, you can save her even at the cost of the Roidif's life, as we're going to explain, and as the Gemara is going to go on to explain from the pasuk that we see that point. After Ritzeach nitin latzila b'nafshei, the same way Ritzeach, you can also save him even at the cost of his life. So therefore, so ultimately, that's where we learn it from. It's from that Hekesh, that again, he was where Tosfos says that it means that it means not just that you're allowed to, but that you have to. The Naira Marasa Gufa Manolan, and turn where we know the Naira Marasa herself, that you do that. And the answer is, because the Tana Dvei Rabbi Shmuel, as we learn in a Braisa from the Yeshiva of Rabbi Shmuel, the Tana Dvei Rabbi Shmuel, the Pasuk says that, the Pasuk says that she's innocent and she's not high of anything, because the pasuk says that she screamed out the Ein Moshiach Lo, and there was nobody to save her, which implies Ha Yesh Moshiach Lo, implying if there had been somebody available to save her, B'chol Davar Sheyachol Moshiach, then he has to do it in with whatever method that he could to save her. So in other words, the flow is like this. By the Naira Marasa, the pasuk is saying that she's innocent. Now, we don't really need to know that because we have other psukim that make that clear. So instead, what we do is we say the pasuk is saying that she screamed out the Ein Moshiach Lo, there's nobody to save her, from which we learn that if somebody was able to save her, then he's chayav to do so. And in turn, because the pasuk compares, or Ritzeach, because the pasuk draws a comparison between the Naira Marasa and the Ritzeach, then we learn that the same thing applies to a Ritzeach. So that's where we get then that it applies to Naira Marasa and Ritzeach, as we said in the Mishnah. The Mesher Chochma actually points out an interesting idea on this pasuk. He says, now you have a couple of different words in Lashon Kodesh for saving. You have the word Yeshua and you have the word Ezra. So here he says, if the Torah had said the Ein Ozer law, then it would mean that nobody's helping her to get out of the situation. That wouldn't necessarily mean that you have a responsibility to kill the person who's trying to do it. But he says the word Yeshua many times means actually killing the killing the enemy. For example, we have Vayosha Hashem Vayemahu. Doesn't just mean that Hashem rescued the Jewish people. It means that Hashem punished and killed the Mitzriim who were chasing after them. And there are other examples like that. It's not an absolute 100% rule, but by and large, he says that's how it is. And therefore, from the fact that it says Ve'en Moshiach, from that itself, we learn that somebody should have done it, even if it means killing the person. Gufa. So now let's get back to the braisa that we said before. Minayim l'royas chaveres shotaveh b'nahar. We said that if you see a person drowning in a river, a chaya gerarto, or an animal dragging him away, a listin boyin olav, or robbers are coming to attack him. So we said shulchayev latzilo. So we said you do have to save him. So here we're not talking about necessarily, so here we're not necessarily talking about killing. That's the Gemara I'd asked before. From there, you see that there's a responsibility to save him, but we didn't see that that necessarily involves killing the other person, and not in all these cases is there anybody to be killed in the case he's drowning in a river. Anyway, so we said, Tamad Lemele, Samad al Damrecha, therefore the Pasuk had said, don't stand by your brother's blood. So the Gemara asks, V'homa hocha nafka, you're telling me that we learn this din from here, from this pasuk, mehosam nafka, don't we have a different pasuk from which we learn that din, that mitzvah? Namely, the pasuk says about hashavas aveda, the pasuk says that you have to return the person's lost object, and a braita says, avedas gufoy minayin, how do we know that if he himself is about to be lost as well, if he's going to lose his own body, so he's in danger, now there is a Gemara elsewhere that talks about you can have a case, for example, where the person himself is lost and you help him find the way. That would be part of this mitzvah as well. But we're saying now where he's about to lose his body entirely, he's about to be killed, that you have to save him. So the pasuk says, "Tamad lema vashe voisoi loy." Therefore, the pasuk says you should return it to him. So vashe voisoi means not just you should return it, the object, but it also means you should return him to himself. So it means, in other words, you have to return him. So he himself is going to lose himself, and you have to. And so Rashi explains the words "vashevoisoi loy" is both extra. So it means return his body to himself. Tosfos points out that actually there's a Gemara in Bava Metzia that learns something from the word "vashevoisoi," but here we're talking about primarily the word "loy" is extra. So in any case, then you have to do that. So we see from that pasuk alone that you have the mitzvah to do that. And the answer is, so you would think, if it weren't for that, if you only had that possibility, then it means that you have to save him yourself. So if you yourself are in a position to pull him out of the river or get him away from the wild animal or what have you, then yeah. But if we're talking about where you have to go into Tircha and you have to hire somebody, so you have to hire a lifeguard to get him out of the water or whatever, you would have thought that not, maybe you're not Mechoyev. In the same way, for example, as when it comes to Hashavas Aveda, you're not necessarily obligated to put in that much monetary effort into it. Kamash Malan, therefore we're telling you, therefore you have the pasuk like Samar al Damarecha, that yes, you do have to hire people if necessary and do it that way. Now there is quite a bit of discussion about that. So what would happen, for example, so now later on you're entitled to go and ask the guy for reimbursement, but what about if you know he's not going to reimburse you? Nevertheless, the poskim seem to say that you would still be obligated to put money into it. The Chavis Yor wants to say that maybe not, but the halacha seems to be that you do need to. The person who was saved should have an obligation to return it, but nevertheless, but if he didn't, then not. There is also a lot of interesting discussion in this connection about various other cases like that. What if it's not a matter of money? What about, for example, the person mechuyev to put himself through tsar, what do you call it? Is he required, for example, to put himself through tsar, or to put himself through discomfort in order to save the other person? The Magen Avraham brings in that connection that yes, it seems that he is required to put himself through discomfort in order to save the other yid.
So, so you have that, for example. You have there's a lot of discussion about whether a person is obligated to put himself in danger in order to save another. Here, the Magen Avraham brings mashma shu mechuyev lisbol tzar, that a person is required to suffer some tzar kadesh la yehorig chaver bechinam, so another person doesn't get killed for nothing. So there's a lot of discussion about that. There's talk about, for example, are you obligated to put yourself in danger, in possible danger in order to save another yid? There's a Radvaz who says about that no, to put yourself in a possible danger to save another yid, the Radvaz says is called a chosid shoite. And there's a lot of discussion about that. What's the nature? What's the degree of danger we're talking about over here? I mean, take for example, the whole point, for example, soldiers, let's say, when they go to war, they're going on Mesiras Nefesh, and we hold highly of them. We certainly don't say that they're a chosid shoite. Poskim talk about, for example, giving blood. Are you required to give blood? That's not something that's going to be that's not something that's going to be at the cost of a person's life. So there is considerable discussion about that, about what exactly is the nature of a person's chiyuv to do something to put himself through discomfort or danger or whatever in order to save another person, and is he allowed to do that, and when would he even be required to do that? The Gemara goes on, getting back to the matter of roidif, tonen abanon, echad a roidif acha chaver lahogoy, whether you're talking about a person who is chasing after somebody with intent to kill, the echad a zohar, or where he's chasing after a man from Mishkav Zohar, as we said in the Mishnah, the echad naira mairasa, or naira mairasa, the echad chayvin missus bastin, or whether we're talking about any other arayas that involve missus bastin, for example, an eshes ish, the echad chayvin krisus, or whether you're talking about whether you're talking about other people who are chayiv krisa, for who are chayiv koris, for example, a man's running after his sister to be mizana with her. So in all those cases, matzilonos and benafshoy, in all those cases, we save him at the cost of his own life. And again, like Tosfos said before, matzilonos and benafshoy means not necessarily we're not talking about saving the victim. We're talking the would-be victim. We're talking about actually saving the person himself from doing the Aveda at the cost of his own life. So that's all. In other words, so again, the rule is it has to be either murder, or if it's arayas, then it has to be any chayva krisis or missus basedin, whether man or woman. Almona l'koin gadol, but for example, if a koin gadol is running after an almona to have relations with her, where that's only an isur lav, a grush of a chalutza, a koin hedyet, or a koin hedyet is running after a grush of a chalutza, doesn't necessarily mean running after in all these cases, whatever, they're trying to marry or have relations with them, which is also, chalutza, by the way, would be also only dirabanan, but the Gemara usually puts those together, grusha, which is daraisa, and chalutza, which is dirabanan, so the Gemara usually pairs them up. In any case, so that kind of thing, ein matzilonos and benafshoy, then we don't save at the cost of his life, because even though there is pagam involved, so again, when it comes to murder, then there's a permanent pagam, the person is being killed. When there's arayas, then we said also there's pagam and it's arayas. Now Rashi points out this Braisa is not arguing with our Mishnah, even though our Mishnah only mentioned a Zohar and a Naira Marosa. Nevertheless, the Tana of our Mishnah is not disagreeing with it. He just didn't bother listing them, but in fact, it does mean other cases of Krisus and Mrs. Bastin as well. But only when there's pagam like that. But on the other hand, I'm one of the kohen gadol and grusha v'halutza l'kohen hedyet ain matzilonos and benafshon, because there's not such a serious thing, even though there is pagam, because now she's going to be a halala. Nevertheless, though, it's only chai v'lavim, and we're going to work out later on that this concept of matzilonos and benafshon does not apply to chai v'lavim. Tosfos actually points out given that already we said in the Mishnah that a behema is excluded, so we see that it's not across the board, across arayas. Otherwise, we would have said, we often say that for certain purposes, all arayas are compared to one another. But the fact that we say over here, the fact that we say over here that a behemoth is excluded shows that we're not making that comparison. Continues the Braisa. Nevda ba avera ein matzilanosa benafshay. What happens if the avera was already done? So this person is running after the naira marasa or whatever case of arayas, and they actually accomplished what they were setting out to do. They actually did have relations. So then already we don't save her. Then already we don't save him at the cost of his life, because the whole point is the pasuk is telling you that you don't want the pagima, you don't want this blemish to be made. Once it's done already, then it's already a done deal, and therefore then all you can do is bring him to Beis Din and get him executed. Yeshla Mashiach, and the Braisa continues, if there is some other way of saving her without killing him, by wounding him, for example, then you can't save her at the cost of his life. You can only do that when there's no other way to do it. That's what we learned earlier in the Masechta. That was the argument between Yoav and Avner, where Avner had killed Asoil and was chasing after him, and Yoav claimed that you could have wounded him instead of killing him, and Avner was saying, I couldn't because he was behind me, and I couldn't aim that carefully, and Yoav tells him you aimed in a very vulnerable spot, so obviously you could have. So you have that. Rabbi Yehuda disagrees on and says here's a case where here's another case where you don't kill him. Also, if she says leave him alone so that he doesn't kill her, then we don't kill him. In other words, so you have to imagine, for example, you have the case like he's holding her hostage or something, and she says, if you kill him, if you try to kill him, he's gonna try to kill me. So leave him alone. Now the Chachamim are saying, as we're gonna learn on Amud Bey, is that that doesn't matter. We still obviously we don't want her to be killed, but if we're able to kill him, then we still do that. Rabbi Huda is saying once she says that, automatically that itself means that now we don't have a right to kill him anymore. As we're gonna work out on Amud Bey, why Rabbi Huda holds that. That's the Braisa. So the Gemara says, Menahani Mili, where do we know all these dinim? So Omakro, the Pasuk says, V'lanaro le'sasa dover, the Pasuk says again, in the case of a Naira Marasa, don't do anything to the Naira. Ein manaro chet moves, there's no sin of death for her, meaning she's not chayiv nisa. Now, if it says V'lanaro le'sasa dover, then of course it means that you're not killing her. So what are we learning from these words? So like this, in most places in the Torah, where it says the word Na'ara, we read it Na'ara with a comets under the resh, but it's written in most places in the Torah Na'ar without the comets without the hay after it. Then Na'ar means a young boy. So therefore Na'ar is Zechor. So the fact that the Torah writes the letters Nun Ayin Resh without the hay at the end means we learn from that a male. Na'ara, but the fact is we read it Na'ara with a comets under the resh and therefore an implied hey, so that means Zunaira Marosa. Then there we learn from that the same din applies to a Naira Marosa. Tosfos points out there are other places in Shas where the Gemara explains that Na'ara come that the word Na'ara spelt without the hey comes to include a katana. However, Tosfos says over here, first of all, we don't need that over here because we're talking about whether she's chayiv misa or not. The pasuk is talking about that she's not chayiv misa. If she's a katana, she's anyway obviously not chayiv misa. Plus, anyway, there's so many times in the Torah in this connection where it says Na'ara that we can use one of them to daushin about a katana and another one to say that it includes a boy over here. In any case, so we learn from that, the boy in the Naira Marasa, when it says chet, the pasuk says that she doesn't have a sin, so from the word chet, elu chayvet krisos, so therefore that includes cases where there would have otherwise been a chiyuv karis. And then with all this, the whole phrase over here, ein lanara chet moves, is extra because again, the pasuk already said, lanara l'sasa dover, don't do anything to her, so therefore these words, ein lanara chet moves, is all extra, and therefore the Gemara can darshan it word by word. So again, the word nara, spelt without the hey, teaches us the zchur, pronounced with the hey, it teaches us the naira marasa, chet refers to chayvet krisus. Moves, and when it says death, Elu Chayvim Mrs. Basin. That refers to the case where this relationship would involve Mrs. Basin. So therefore, now the Pasuk is saying that the Ein Mashiach Allah, there was nobody available to save her, implying that somebody should have saved her, killing the assailant if necessary. The Gemara asks Kolhani Lomali. Well, why does the Pasuk need to list them all separately? After all, for example, the schor himself is part of Mrs. Beis Din, so why does it need to list them all out separately? So the answer is tzrichi. We need all of them. Because of Rachmana Nar, if the Torah had told us only the word Nar, then he would say Mishum Delav Urche, because it's not natural for a man to be used for this purpose. So you would say that therefore the Torah is saying go and kill the Roidif in order to prevent him from doing it. Avol Naira de Urche, but when it comes to a girl, we're talking she's a Naira Marasa, it's not that she should be reserved for her husband, but nevertheless, the fact is she is a woman and it's a natural thing for her to have relations, so maybe therefore it's not considered such a serious thing that you should, to the extent that you should save her by killing him. So Emelo, you would have thought that not. Therefore, the pasuk needs to mention the Naira as well. The Kosar Rahman and Naira, on the other hand, if he said only a Naira, you would think, Mishum de Kapogim law, because he's making a pgam to her. He's taking away her besulim. Now her husband, and now she's going to be less, now there's going to be more of a gnai between her and her husband. Every time her husband is going to have relations with her, he's going to think about what happened to her, and it's going to impact the relationship between them. Avon now de like a pogimai, but by now you don't have that kind of pogima. He himself, obviously, he went through a very traumatic experience over there, but it's not necessarily going to affect his relationship with his wife later on, for example. Amalo, you would think that not. So therefore it needs to mention both of them. The ikos of Rahmana Hani, but if the Torah had only written the Zohar and the Naira Marasa, you would say Mishum Dahai Lab Urche Huva Hai Kapogim Law. Because in each case you have a special reason to say that there should be reason to kill the person. One, because with the boy, because it's not natural, and with the girl, because again there's this gnai over here that affects her future relationship with her husband. Avol Shar Arayis, but when it comes to other Arayis, Du'uchayu V'lenafesh Pigmayu, it is at least the physical union of the man and the woman over there is something normal, and there's not as much Pigam. It's one thing. In other words, in Arusa, Rashi uses the expression, Chaviva V'yala Schein Ala Orus. She's very precious, and she's like a graceful gazelle to her Orus. He's looking forward to, my wife is a Basula, and we're going to have first relations, so now he feels like he's been cheated out of that, and like he feels less of an affection towards her than he did before. If they're pnuya, if they're unmarried, and we're talking about, for example, his sister or his daughter or whatever, or other relatives, and there's not as much of a pagam, and even if they're married, then still, yes, of course, it may affect their relationship with their husband, but it's not as much of a pagam as with an arusa who's still a basula, for example. So you would have thought that maybe in that case, that's not reason enough to save him, to save her at the cost of his life. So Emaloy, you would have thought that maybe not, maybe you don't have the right to do that. Kosav Rachmana Chet, therefore the Torah writes the word Chet to include also the case of Chai V'Krisus, that even though the Pagam is not as great over there, nevertheless, that's still what you do. The ikos rachmana chet, but then if the Torah had only written the word, that if the Torah had only written the word chet, then you would think that maybe it includes people where there's an isur lav as well, like we said before about the almona with the kohen gadol, for example. There is a chet after all involved over there, so you would have thought that maybe even in that case, then you should kill him to prevent him from doing it. And then, kasher rachmana moves, therefore the pasuk writes chet moves, a sin of death, to teach us therefore that we're talking about that. The kasher rachmana moves, but if the Torah had only written the word moves, have amin a chayv misses based in ein chayv krisus loy, then you would think maybe it's only the case where there's misses based in involved, but not the case of chayv kar of chiyuv karis. So you would know, for example, if she's an eishes ish, or for example, she's his daughter, or his mother, or his mother-in-law, or whatever, all the ones where there's one of the four misses based in, then you would do it. You wouldn't know that would apply to chayv krisus, such as a sister, for example. Therefore, kasher rachmana chet. Therefore, the Torah wrote the word chet as well. So in short, we need all the various words that we're quoting over here in order to learn the exact parameters of when we do this, when we're mafsal b'nafshoy, and when not. All right, well, the Gemara asks, well, in that case, then the Torah could have only written the words chet mavis, not bringing the words nara nara altogether, and it would be clear. The nara and the nara are included in chet mavis, because in both of them, in the case of both a schor, and then in the case of both schor and nara marosa, there is missus based in involved. So therefore, so automatically from that, you would know that they're included. So why even bother mentioning the case of why single out the words nara nara? So the Gemara says the reason is chadlam orti oved avodas chachovim v'chadlam orti behem of a Shabbos. So it's like this: one of them tells us once if we only said the word chet mavis, then we would think that it means anything where there's misa involved. So therefore, it would include not only arayas; it would include, for example, a person is running to worship avodah zarah, or a person is running to break Shabbos. Or behema, which after all, to a certain extent, the behema is included in the category of the arayas. So you would think that they're included as well. So note, when we have the fact that it says nar, that's written nun ayin resh, and we pronounce it na'ara with a comments under the resh, and it makes the word na'ara. So from that we learn that it excludes the case where he worships avodah zarah, where otherwise we would have made a kavachoymer to include him. And the other one excludes behema, and where he's coming to commit sodomy, to commit bestiality with an animal, or Shabbos. So Rashi explains what do we mean? So one of them we need to exclude avodah zarah, which we would have had a kavachomer. The other one we need to exclude an animal, because again it's similar to our arayas. Why are we mentioning Shabbos? We don't really need to. Rashi points out we're just mentioning it because the Mishnah had mentioned Shabbos, but we don't really need a miut for it. Once we exclude avodah zarah, there's no reason we should think to include Shabbos. The whole idea is, and the Gemara is going to explain further on, that we would think to make Zera Shava from the word chilul about a Vodizara versus Shabbos, and we're going to have later on, Reb Shimon holds that you actually do kill a person to prevent him from worshipping a Vodizara. So according to Reb Shimon, we do in fact say that a Vodizara is included. Once we do that, we would think to include Shabbos as well, and therefore the Mishnah would have to tell us not. But when we're saying that we're excluding a Vodizara, then we don't really need to exclude Shabbos, because the whole basis of thinking to include a Vodizara, thinking to include Shabbos would have been on the basis of avodah zarah, and avodah zarah itself we're excluding. So we can have one pasuk to exclude behema, and the other one to exclude avodah zarah, and with that automatically goes Shabbos. Now Tosfos points out we still need both of them, because if we only had one, then we would think that it means only behema and Shabbos, and we would think avodah zarah is excluded. In fact, Tosfos says that really another way of looking at it, rather different than Rashi. Rashi is saying again that using one to exclude behema, the other to exclude avodah zarah, and with avodah zarah automatically comes Shabbos. Tosfos finds that a little difficult, because it still amounts to saying that you're excluding two things from one. So rather, Tosfos says that no, from one of them we can exclude avodah zarah and Shabbos, because again, Shabbos goes together with the other, and then the other is for behema. So that's why it had to say nara nara, because otherwise it would in fact mean that you would include avodah zarah and you would include behema or Shabbos as well. All right, the Gemara says, Reb Shimon ben Yochai, Dama Oyver Rebbe Deskechav, Nitzin Latzila ben Nafshoi. Well, what about a point of Reb Shimon ben Yochai later on in the Sugya, who says that if a person is running to worship avodah zarah, you do in fact go to kill him and prevent him from worshipping avodah zarah. According to him, why does it need to say nara nara? And the answer is, according to him, chad lamorti behema, v'chad lamorti Shabbos. One of them tells us when he's planning to commit bestiality with the animal, and the other would tell us where he's coming to be mechalal Shabbos. And why do we need, according to him, a specific limud for excluding chilul Shabbos? Sakadai v'chamina, because otherwise you would have thought, Kesi Shabbos mechilul chilul me'avodas kechavim. Maybe we should learn a gzeira shava from oved avodah zarah. By both Shabbos and avodah zarah, it uses the word chilul. It uses the chodesh, uses the shirdish to be mechalal. By Shabbos, you have mechalal leil mois yumos. By avodah zarah, where you have specifically by moilach, where we talked about earlier that moilach is not necessarily full fledged avodah zarah, but still it's definitely in that category. And you have the expression voice chalal shem elakecha. So you would think, therefore, that it means that that you should include Chilul Shabbos, and that would be included on the basis of the Zedah Shavah as well, and therefore, according to Rav Shimon, you need a pasuk to tell us that not, with the word Nara Nara, meaning that this din about Nitam Atzila B'Nafshay. So again, according to the Chachamim, it's only in cases of Arayis, as well as because of the Hekesh that we learned before, a case of the murder, and according to Rav Shimon, fine, you're also including Avodah Zarah, because you're also including Avodah Zarah as we're going to work out later, according to Reb Shimon, why that's included. All right, the Gemara says, Ula Reb Lazar, Reb Shimon, Dram Machalos, HaShabbos, Nitzin, Latzila, B'Nafshay. Now, there is, in fact, an opinion of Reb Lazar, Reb Shimon, who says that even somebody who's going to break Shabbos, you can kill him to prevent him from doing it. And he learns the Asya Shabbos Mechilul Chilul Ma'avad Eschachavim. He, in fact, does that and learns this Gzeda Shavah on the word Chilul from Avad Ezara. So according to him, my Kalameh. Now then, what are we going to say? Why is the Pasuk saying Nara Nara, where it could have just said Chet Mavis, and we would include anything that's Chayiv Kores or Mrs. Bastin? And the answer is, according to him, Chad Miyot Lamor to Behema. One of them is telling us to exclude a Behema. Even though a Behema, there is Mrs. Bastin involved, and even though it is in the Parashah of Arayas, nevertheless, it's not included, because it requires that there's pagam, and with an animal there's not so much pagam. The idach, the other one, the other miut, wouldn't really be so necessary. I did, cause of rachman nara, cause of nami nara. Since the pasuk has to use the word nar to tell us that an animal is excluded. So the point is, a number of the mafoshim make the point over here that the reason why we're using specifically the word nar for that, why don't we say that instead we learn that from nara? And the answer is, because again, a nara, you have a pgam, we established at the bottom of the previous omud, that with a nara, you have a serious pgam, with a nar, not so much. So therefore, and a behema, there's no pgam either. So if it said na'ara, we wouldn't know to exclude from it a behema. Therefore, we need the word nar, where there's no pgam either. And nevertheless, the Torah is saying that you save him by killing him if necessary. So therefore, we can learn from that. But as opposed to an animal, we do not. So once it says that, cause of nami na'ara, then it also mentions na'ara, even though according to the B'loz of Reb Shimon, it's not so necessary. Because after all, the parasha is talking about a nara, so therefore it does do that. So again, according to him then, the vote would be, the Torah could have just said chet moves, but then we wouldn't know to exclude an animal. It could have said na'ara, but we still wouldn't know to exclude an animal. So therefore it needs to say nar to tell us to exclude an animal. And once we do that, then already, since after all, the context of the parasha is talking about a na'ara, then therefore the Torah uses the word na'ara instead of just leaving it as nar. But that's how we do it. So according to him, in fact, there is no miut to say that that Avodah Zarah and Shabbos should be excluded. Avodah Zarah he's going to include on the basis of what we're going to learn tomorrow. Bas Hashem, why Rav Shimon holds that Avodah Zarah is included in this category. And as far as Shabbos, Rabbi Elazar ben Rabbi Shimon is learning that on the basis of Gzeirah Shavah from the word Chilul. Tosfos points out, by the way, now you have there are other cases where the Torah says voice of Chalol, but those don't involve Chiyuv Misa. So we're talking about where there's it says Chilul and there's Chiyuv Misa involved, which is true of both Shabbos and Moilach, which again is a type of Avodah Zarah. Okay. So we've worked out, according to all the different opinions, why we need these various mi'utim in the pasuk, na'ar, na'ara, chet, and moves. According to the Chachamim, it excludes everything according to the Chachamim, it includes only Zechor, Naira, Marosa, any cases of Krisis and Nisus based in among the Arayas, as well as from a Hekesh that we said before, murder. According to Reb Shimon, all of those plus Avodah Zarah, and according to Reb Shimon, all of those, including Avodah Zarah, plus also Shabbos. But in all cases, excluding an animal and excluding Arayas, which are only a Chi of Lav, and excluding any other Averis, even if there's Nisa involved. Okay. Now, we had said on Omer Aleph We'd said on Amud Aleph that Rabbi Yehuda Oymer Afa Emeres Hamichu Lo Yishlo Yavgena, that Rabbi Yehuda had said you can have a case where the woman says, where the Naira Marosa says, don't kill him because he's going to kill me. So according to Rabbi Yehuda, automatically at that point, now as a practical matter, in other words, if Taka, the only way to kill him is she's going to die as well, then fine. Now, obviously, we're not going to do that. We don't want to kill her unnecessarily. But in other words, according to Rabbi Yehuda, the point is the very fact that she says that means that now the guy is no longer Chayav Misa. Now there's no, even if it were possible now at this point to kill him without harming her, Rabbi Yehuda had said we would not because she said that. The Gemara says, "B'mai kamitzigi." What is the underlying machloikas between Rav Yehuda and the Chachamim? Omar Rava, the makpedes al pigma umanichato shelo yahagena. Because the case is over here, she does care about her pagam. She would prefer not to have that pagam. So now, if she wasn't makped on it, then. If she wasn't machped on it, then the Chachamim certainly wouldn't say that you should kill him because of the Aveira. Because the whole point is, in other words, the same way as we said with Avodah Zarah and Shabbos, even though those are very serious Aveiras, that's not a reason to kill him. There still does have to be that there is Kepeda involved, that she herself doesn't want this to happen. She obviously doesn't want this to happen. Umanichatu shelo yahagena. But on the other hand, she's telling the would-be rescuer, don't kill him because I don't want him to kill you. Meaning, in other words, so the machlokas therefore would be like this. Rabbanan savri apigma kosev rachmana, kopid rachmana. The Chachamim say the whole reason why you're allowed to save him, why you're allowed to save her, is because we see the Torah is makpid on her pagan. Because again, that's the reason why according to the Chachamim, we're excluding Avodah Zarah and Shabbos, and according to everybody, we're excluding Behema, and so on and so forth, is because they know there's no Pagan. So obviously the Torah does care about the Pagan. So therefore, the fact that Bahare Makpedes al Pigma, and she does care about it, and therefore that's reason enough to try to save her. So therefore, if you can manage to wound him or kill him without harming her, then yes, the Chachamim say you should do that. But Rabbi Yehuda answers to that, no. Hai de ka'amar achmana kaplei, the fact that the Torah is telling us that you should kill him, mishum de mosra nafshal ektola, because otherwise the Torah is concerned that she herself is going to be mosra nefesh to be killed rather than to do this. There are tsnuas who, so like this, now we're going to learn in the Gemara tomorrow that technically in a case like this, we learned in the pasuk before, the woman's not chayev because she didn't do anything wrong. It's not b'ritzona, but we're going to learn later on when we talk about the whole sugya of kiddush Hashem and chilul Hashem and when Yehoreg Val Yav or not. We're going to learn on Ayin Dalet Amud Beis that a woman is not necessarily included in that when it comes to Arayas because she's Karka Olam, she's passive. Nevertheless, though, there can be tsnuas who are going to say that, no, I don't want to do that. The fact is that it's going to make a pagam in me, and I would rather be moser nefesh rather than allowing that to happen. There are many examples throughout Jewish history of heroines who did just that. The Gemara mentions in Ksubas, there are examples like that. There were times in Jewish history when there were laws that a kala is to boil a hegman tchila. The Gemara mentions in Ksubas that there were cases where they would have a law that the local goyish ruler or warlord or whatever is entitled to the first night with a kala. And then there were girls who would be most nefesh for such a thing. And because of that, the Chachamim had to make certain takonis and then change certain takanas to allow them to get married without having to be moser nefesh. So the point is, there can be women who are moser nefesh for such a thing, even though in principle they would be allowed to let it happen, but they don't want to. So the Torah, so Rabbi Yehuda says, look, the Torah is concerned that she might be one of those snores, and she's going to try to resist, and then she's going to end up getting herself killed. So therefore, the Torah is saying, go ahead and save the assailant to prevent her from having to be moser nefesh like that. Well, Rabbi Yehuda says, "Hol and Moser Nafshal Ektola," but here she's clearly not doing that because she's saying, "Don't kill him because he might kill me, because he's going to kill me." So we see that she's not having that degree of Mesiras Nefesh. She is ready to, if it's necessary, then she'll submit rather than losing her life. So therefore, Rabbi Yehuda says, And that already, therefore, she's taken herself out of the category of, so in other words, because in that case, then there's no, Rabbi Yehuda would say that her life is not at stake. In other words, in short, Rabbi Yehuda is saying, when her life is at stake, that's when you have the shurus, that's when you have a mitzvah to kill the roidif. But here, her life is not at stake, because she's gonna say, look, if there's nobody available to save, then she's ready to submit. So therefore, so now Rabbi Yehuda says that takes her out of the category of nita matzila benafshei. Well, okay, so we're establishing so far that the point is where this pagam, then that's when you're able to kill the roidif. Well, the Gemara asks, Amaleda Popol Abaya, Almon al Kohen Gadol Nami Kapogim Law. Well, in that case, in the case of Chayvei Lavan, there's also a pagam after all. She's an Almona, and she's going to have relations with the Kohen Gadol, which is Osir. Fine, it's not a great pagam, like we said before, but it's nevertheless still a pagam. So why should it be any different than the Arayas? As we said before, with the Arayas, you have either she's a Besula, and either she's a Besula, and it makes a permanent change to her, or even that the... So Rashi actually had said at the top of the Amud where she's an erva and she's a basula. So the pagam is not as great, and the same thing if she's already married, then the pagam is not as great. But where do we see that there should be a difference between a big pagam and a little pagam? If the Chachamim are saying b'makpedas al pigma, she is concerned about her pagam. Well, then in that case, then why should we distinguish with an almona l'kohen gadol where we said before there's a miut? And the answer is Amalei. So Abaya says, because that's just it. A pigma rabba kapid rachmana. The Torah is only makbid on a big pagam. So for example, when you have this kores, so Mrs. Bastin, and after all, there's also, if she becomes pregnant from it, then there's going to be a child who's a mamzer. So it's a tremendous humiliation for him, and she becomes a zoina from that, as opposed to a pigma zutta, like kapid rachmana, but when there's a much smaller pagam, then the Torah is not makbid to the extent that you should be able to kill the roidif to prevent it from happening. And here, with an almon of the kohen gadol, Rashi makes the point, she won't be considered a zoina, she'll be considered a halala. Either way, she's also to marry a kohen, obviously, but still, the name zoina is a much more humiliating name than halala, and therefore, and if they were to have a child together, the child would be a halal, he wouldn't be a mamzer, so therefore, so it's considered a much smaller pagam, and therefore, says a bias of the Torah is telling us that don't try to save her by killing him, because there's only a small pagam involved. So far, in other words, the rule is there has to be a big pagam, and according to Rabbi Yehuda, it has to be that she's makbid on it as well, and is ready to be moser nefesh, and is ready to be killed to prevent it from happening. Okay. Next, we had said in the Braisa on Amud Aleph, when we went through the words in the Pasuk, Ein Lanara Chet Moves, so we said... from the word chet, we were saying chet eluchai v'krisis. From there, we learn that also if the roidif is chasing after a woman who's chayat, where there would be a chi of kodis for them having relations, then also is one of those cases where nitin la'tzila b'nafshei. So the Gemara says uraminu. I have a contradiction to that though. A Mishnah says in Masechta Ksuvos the elu nairus sheyesh lahem knas. The following nairus. There is a knas involved. Namely, the Torah tells us in Parashas Kisei, right after it talks about this case of the Naira Marosa where there's Misa involved, right after that the Torah goes on to say that if she's not a Naira Marosa, if she's just a Naira but not Marosa, and he goes and grabs her and rapes her, so then there's a knas involved. He has to pay her father Chamishim Kosef, he has to pay 50 Sloyim, and he has to marry her if she and her father wants, and he's never allowed to divorce her. So the Mishnah starts describing the following cases there would be knas involved, even though there can be misa involved as well. Habala Choisei, and the first one is where he has relations with his sister. Now, the sister is a case of Chiyuv Kares. The point of it being, Rashi says, in other words, even though, now you're not going to be able to be Mekayim, the Veloy Siyah Le'isha, obviously he's not going to be able to marry her, nevertheless, he still is Chayuv to pay the Knas. But the point that's relevant to our Gemara is, even though he's Chayuv Kares, he's still going to have to pay. Now, we have in that Gemara, in that Gemara in Ksubas, where it points out the opinion of Rav Nechunya ben Akana, who says that no, anytime there's chiyuv kares, then we have the concept of kam lebe d'rabimine, that when a person is chayiv misa, then they don't pay. Rav Nechunya ben Akana, and the Gemara there says that it does apply to kares as well. So according to him, in fact, a man would not be chayiv a knas for raping his sister because there's chorus involved. But according to the Chachamim, who say that not, that concept of kam lebe d'rabimine applies only to missus based in and not to chorus. So even if he doesn't actually get killed, then nevertheless, the question is like this though. If we're going to tell me that it's possible to kill him, that nitin latzila benafshei, that he is considered a roidif and you can kill him, well then in that case we should say kam lebe d'rabimine. Fine, we're not going to say kam lebe d'rabimine because of the kores, because that's only according to Rav Nechunya ben Akana, but we should say kam lebe d'rabimine because he's a roidif and could be killed. And once we would say that, then we would also say that even if in fact they didn't end up killing him, there we have a rule, Rashi brings from the Gemara over there, that once we touched on this the other day in the Gemara as well, once we have a case of kom lebe d'rabimine, then we apply it whether the person actually gets killed or not. It applies even to shogeg, for example. So that being the case then, so what do we mean? So why would he be chayav the knas if we have kom lebe d'rabimine? Because nitin latzila benafshei. So the Gemara says, Amru Rabbanan Kamei de Rav Chisda. The Rabbanan told this over to Rav Chisda, and they explained as follows. The Mish'as Ha'ra de Pogma, Iptole Mektola. Because what happens is, like we said on Amun Aleph, once he already did the act, then we don't say Nitzim Atzila B'Nafsha anymore. We do it only to prevent the Pagam from happening, but once the Pagam has already taken place, then we don't have a right to kill him anymore. Well then, the moment that there was Ha'ra, as soon as there was the beginning of Bia, then already he caused the Pagam, because then he destroyed her besulim, iftalei miktola. At that point, he becomes potter from nisa. Because again, then you don't have the nitin latzila benafsha anymore. So already the pagam has taken place at that point. Mamona lemishalam a gmar bia. But when does he have to pay the money? Only when there's gmar bia. Now Rashi makes the point over here, Gmar Bia doesn't have to do, so at the time of Ha'ra, he hasn't yet, the Gemara is assuming, he hasn't yet removed the Besulim. He hasn't gone deep enough to actually remove her Besulim. Nevertheless, she is already considered a Ba'ula, even if she has her physical Besulim, and therefore the Pagam has already taken place. So now, at that point, the Pagam has already taken place, but when is he chayev for the knas? Only when he actually removes her besulim, and that would be only gmar bia. Now Rashi points out that gmar bia doesn't necessarily mean all the way in, because he doesn't need to be that far in order to destroy the besulim. The point is a further stage more than just ha'ra. So at that point already, therefore, in other words, you can say that by the time he reaches that stage, he's already not chayev mis anymore. Therefore, there's no kam lebe d'rabimine. The Gemara says, "Hanichal amanu amah ha'ra'az u'nashika." Well, that works very well according to the opinion. Now, we learned this earlier in the Masechta, and it's also in Yevamos and in other places, that there are two different definitions of what ha'ra'a means. We know for sure that ha'ra'a is considered bia for pretty much all purposes in halacha. We know that because by a couple of the arayas, the Torah uses that expression. By a nidya, it says that's makor hahera, for example, and there's one or two other examples, but the point is, so we know that hara is considered bia already, but what is the definition of hara? So there we have, according to the opinion that hara means the first contact. So at that point already you can say that there's no besulim have been removed yet. But there is pagam by the fact that now she's a woman who's had relations. So then therefore you can say, like we just said, that at that point of neshika is when he becomes he already created the pagam. But at that point, yes, nitin latzila benafsha, you could stop him at that point, still at the cost of his life. But when is he chayiv in the knas? Once there was neshika, then already he did the pagam. Now at that point, you can't kill him anymore. And when is he chayiv the knas? Only later on when he puts in the atara and destroys her besulim. But if you tell me that hara itself means putting in the atara, putting in the tip of the aver, then what are you going to have? Then the fact is the time when he does the pagam, when she's considered a ba'ula, is also the time when he's destroying the basilim. Well, based on kom lebedirabimine, we should say that he's potter from the knas. So the Gemara says, Ela Omer of Chista, Kugat Shabola Shaloi Kadarka. Fine, so we can be talking about where the first time he had relations with her was Shaloi Kadarka, and then later on he did Kadarka. So now, they're already, the Pagam has taken place because she's already not a Basula anymore, even though her physical Basulim still exists, because those are not destroyed by Shaloi Kadarka. But at that point could be where he's not. So now already, because there was relations, Shaloi Kadarka, therefore you can't be saved. Therefore you can't save her anymore by killing him. Because again, that only applies until the pagam has taken place. Meanwhile, then she's still a basula. She's still physically a basula. And until he does Kadarka, then he's not going to be chayev for the. He's not going to be chayev for the knas. So that would be an explanation. So Shabala, Kavin Shabala, Shalai Kadarka, Bechazer of all our Kadarka. And then later on, he had relations with her Kadarka, and therefore now he destroys her Basulim. But by this point already, it's too late. She's already a Ba'ula. And therefore, so you can't be Matzel Benafshe anymore. So, in fact, Tosfos elsewhere points out that it would equally well work for that matter, even if he did again Shaloi Kadarka. Tosfos points out elsewhere that he'd also be paying a knas. So therefore, you could shell it in that way, and you could make the din work that way, and it still doesn't contradict the point that where there is pagam involved, that he would in fact be potter from paying on the grounds of kol lebedid avamine. So this is all according to Rashi, that Gemar Bia is when he removes her Basulim. But Tosfos points out that he should have to pay a knas even if he's not removing her Basulim, because again, you have the case where we just said about Shaloi Kadarka, for example. So rather, the point is, Tosfos learns differently, that only by the beginning of Bia, he doesn't pay for what he did at the beginning of Bia, because Kom Levedid Amine, so therefore, when does the Chiyu of paying first kick in? Only Gemar Bia. Usually we would say, if there's no Kodesh involved, he would in fact be Chayav Knas from Hara, but he or not until Gemar Bia, precisely because at the time of Hara, he would still be Chayav Nisa. And then Tosfos goes on to discuss that, to discuss whether Hara applies across the board or whether there are exceptions. Rava, Amar Rava says another answer, B'mani Chatur, Shlo Yaugen, and Rav Yehudi. You could also explain that you're talking about where he says, leave him alone so he doesn't kill her, and that would be Rav Yehuda, that would be according to Rav Yehuda, so that mission in Ksubas would be according to Rav Yehuda, where again, as we said in our sugi over here, that when she says that, Hanicholoi Shalo Yaugena, then already Rav Yehuda says, now that she's not ready to go on Mesiras Nefesh and to allow herself to be killed, then we don't have the right to kill him to save her life, so therefore in that case, then that would be the case where even though it's his sister and there is Koris involved, but Rav Yehuda holds in that case, then he's not Chayav Misa anymore because she said leave him alone, and therefore that would be the case where he's Chayav and Knas. Tosfos actually points out the mission over there says Davka and Naira, and Rabbi Yehuda says that the concept of paying a Knas would apply even to Akhtana, so we don't mean the missioner is completely like him, but in any case, the point is it's basically like him. Rapapa says another answer. You could say the Mishnah in Ksubas is not talking about a case of onus at all. It's talking about a case of mefata. Namely, you have in Parshas Kisetze, it talks about onus, but in Parshas but in Mishpatim it talks about the yafata ish besula, where also there's a knas over there. There it's a choice: either he pays a knas or he marries her. Unlike with the onus, where it's both. But in any case, Rapapa says the Mishnah there could be talking about not to that particular part about the sister is not talking about oinus at all, but only mefata, and therefore we don't need to say that it's specifically according to Rabbi Yehuda. It would be according to everybody. So So Abaya Omer, Abaya gives another answer. Another answer is that Mishnah in Ksubas could be talking about one of those cases where it is possible we could be talking about, in fact, Oynes, not like the Papa says, we're only talking about Mefata, but you're talking about where you could save her by wounding him in one of her limbs. In one of his limbs, rather. Rab Yonis and Ben Sholhi, and therefore that Mishnah would go like Rab Yonis and Ben Shol. The Tanya, Rab Yonis and Ben Shol, Roidif show your Roidif acha chaver lahogoy, that if a Roidif is chasing after somebody else to kill him, the Yochel Atzila ba'echad me'evarev, and it's possible to save him by wounding or cutting off one of his limbs, the Loi Hitzil, and he didn't do that, and instead he just went and killed the guy, Neherag Olav, then Rab Yonis and Ben Shol says that the third party who did that would actually be executed by Beis Din for killing the Roidif. He himself would be considered a Ritzeach. Now, the Rabbanan hold that he is allowed to kill him. Meaning, in other words, and even if he doesn't, then fine, he wouldn't be chayiv misa for it. Rabbi Yonasan ben Shol goes so far as to say that not only you wouldn't be able to kill him in that case, but a person who did himself would be chayiv misa. So in short, that would be a case, says Abaya, where we could work out the Mishnah in Ksubas. So we are talking about it is a case of Oynes. So the question was, again, why don't we say he's Chayav Misa, and therefore come labor did Abimene should apply? Because we're talking about over here where it would have been possible to prevent him by something short of killing him, and therefore it's also to do that, and therefore, so therefore he's not Chayav Misa anymore, so therefore there's no come labor did Abimene, therefore he has to pay. So we'll continue tomorrow, Beis Hashem, and we'll work out why Rabbi Yonasan ben Shol says that and what these dinim are about when we say that you have to try to wound the guy and when do we say that you're entitled to kill him, and then various other dinim of Roidif, and then we'll also get into the sugya of Yehorig Val Yaver.